Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Hope everyone had a fantastic weekend. You know, we have a lot we're going to talk about with these champions. Stop laughing. You're both already laughing.
Why are you shooting eye daggers at us, Stacy?
This weekend, we're going to talk about the championship games. There is a major, major, major key that we both took from it, a key to success. We're going to get to that in 1 minute. Before I do, all I have to say is for folks out there, all of us should be, you know, yeah, you're wearing a mask. You're wearing it if you're going into work or in the store or whatever. Sometimes you misplace your mask.
Sure.
Or sometimes you don't want to, when you take it off, put it in your pocket. And so.
Yeah, it happens more times
your
than
your girl invested
brothers.
In what I think. You can see it if you're 710sports.com looking at the video stream. Your girl invested in a cool gold chain to hold up my mask.
You could please look at the stream here. Stacy says this is a cool chain.
Yes.
It's very trendy,
something
very stylish.
Something a lot of young people are doing right now.
But in reality, Curtis, what really does this resemble? I think what's happening here is Life Alert Stacy's coming up again.
And we're seeing
the 80-year-old librarian glasses, the connector
Paul has
to the
one
glasses.
Too. Paul Gallant has one too.
You're not making your case here.
You think he's some sort of style maven?
Come on.
You're
it's
not making
cool.
your case, both
I
of you.
I look hip. Look, just forget it. I'll get into it later. You guys don't know what cool is. It's
you got
called
that.
Fashion.
You made that purchase. I just found out that a baby Heaps number 3
oh
is going to be a girl.
Oh, my gosh, that's what I was going to say. Congratulations.
Man, yes. Big news
Brooke
over the weekend.
Jake and the Heaps fam, Jake and Brooke finding out they're going to be parents to a baby girl going
that's
with
right.
River Heaps.
That's right. Yeah, we've had that name forever. So I've seen it start to become a little trendier and Brooke and I are a little.
You're saying, like, don't make no mistake. We claimed.
Yeah,
it.
Like 11 years ago. This is something that we kind of settled in on. But super exciting. And there was a video that we posted. We did kind of the reveal with like a football.
Mm-hmm.
I threw it against the wall at like a Target or whatever to see, you know, if it was blue or pink. Didn't use any, you know, thing that could start a fire. Just want to be very clear. We were very cautious in what we did. But I have a disease, Stacy. I went back and I watched that video over and over and over again.
Oh my God, analyzing your form?
Yes. I was analyzing my form and I was really disappointed in myself.
Oh,
my back leg kicked up. My chest came over the top of my front leg. It pulled the ball down. So I actually hit the bottom of the target instead of the middle.
Wow.
Like just barely hit it.
You were 10 feet away.
It really bothers me still to this day. Like all the mechanical things that I teach kids and you know, work with Russ and things like that, I mean.
Didn't do it when it mattered most.
No. It was more of a do what I say, not what I do situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was very disappointing.
I mean, you looked like a coach at Curtis and mine quarterback camp. It was so bad.
Well, Josh Allen employed our patented 13-step drop.
That's
last
exactly
night.
Right. He did. And let's go ahead and talk about those games too, because there was a theme in both games. Now, last week, our takeaway was, hey, these are all four offenses that have shaped themselves around four of the top five quarterbacks this year, right? Well, if there's a theme this week, Jake, I think it's that you trust those guys.
Mm.
So if last week is, if you've got that top talent, say your top talent's your quarterback, build around that quarterback. This week was, and trust that guy, Matt LaFleur, and trust that guy, you know, McDermott. Like, there were two moments with Buffalo, but kind of two themes from both losing teams, which is they didn't go for it in four down territory when it really, really mattered.
Mm-hmm.
That's my takeaway. Risk it for the biscuit, as Bruce Arians would say.
I cannot tell you how much I hate saying that and how much Bruce Arians has gotten credit for that over the years. But you know what? Bruce Arians was right. At the end of the first half, it's fourth and three. They originally say, no, we're going to kick the field goal. We're going to play conservative here. And they end up calling a timeout and put Tom Brady and the offense back on the field and try and take advantage of a situation that is right there for the taking. They can really separate themselves if they can get points. I thought originally that they were just going to try and get a field goal. Hey, we get fourth and three. We get past the sticks. We'll settle for a field goal try and get 3 points on the board. Oh, no. They really risked it. They went for it all. They went for a touchdown at the end, and I don't know what the heck Kevin King was doing. He was in no man's land with the type of coverage that he was doing. That's why you love those condensed splits as an offense, because you can expand them out, and sometimes you catch DBs in really bad positions. They don't know technique-wise how to handle it, and Kevin King didn't remain on the outside of Scotty Miller. He got caught inside. Scotty Miller gets behind him, and he's got no chance to recover. Shout out to UW. But I think that, unfortunately, in that moment, that was the game. It didn't matter if Tom Brady threw three picks in that moment, but because you were aggressive and you went for it and got that early separation, you trusted your quarterback. You trusted the greatest of all time to come through for you in that moment, to make the right decisions, to be aggressive, yet make the smart plays, and he did. And that, to me, was the difference of the game. You go back and flip it down to Green Bay Packers and Matt LaFleur. I don't care what you think. If you thought it was a smart decision on them at that moment to kick for the field goal, you got four timeouts left. Essentially what it is, no matter how you look at it, Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, especially when it comes to situational football, is dynamic in these moments. And you put it on your defense to come up with the stop. If it's a 50-50 chance, which essentially what that decision was, Matt LaFleur to go for it on fourth down or to kick the field goal and try and stop Brady in the offense and get another shot back, you chose your defense over your MVP and Aaron Rodgers?
Well,
that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. And that's why I liked the way Bill Barnwell, I was listening to the ESPN Daily podcast this morning. I liked the way that he explained it, which is if you were to look, like all of Twitter was aghast that they decided to go for the field goal rather than go for it. And he said, if you look at just the statistics of it, if you look at just the analytics, what the decision should have been, it is a little, it's not 50-50, but it is a little less obvious just on paper. And then he added, but those analytics sometimes take into account the success rate of an average offense or an average defense. Green Bay, even though they'd been struggling, is not an average offense. They were number one in DVOA, meaning they were the most efficient offense this year. They had the MVP at quarterback. I know that they had been struggling, but up until that point, I think they were over 50% on third down. And fourth down in that situation isn't like a 10% success rate. It's something like over, 60%, maybe 70? I mean, I got to go look into
Correct.
It. But you have a good chance of getting it, and that is with an average offense.
But let's say you miss it, right?
Right.
Let's say you miss it. You don't get it on fourth down. Well, guess what? You also are in pretty good field position as well. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are backed up. They'll play even more conservative because of that. That's typically what offenses do when they're in backed up situations. And if you're able to get a three and out and force them to punt, you're in an even better field position than you would have been had you kicked the field goal and give the Buccaneers the ball at the 20-25 yard line, right? So all those factors going into it, that to me says that that was the best decision to do at the time. And yet Matt LaFleur, when he came out after the game, he said, well, hindsight 2020, I probably would have gone for it. But in the moment, I felt that this was the right call because of how little success we had on first down, second down, and third down. And I get that. But at the same time, you have to continue to implement your confidence in your MVP quarterback. That's what these guys do. When all probability is against them, you have one of the greatest weapons in those moments to come up big when most guys can't. And so you're not dealing with the average quarterback, and that was surprising to me to hear Matt LaFleur be caught up in the moment. And you know what it also allowed for, Stacey? It allowed for sulky Aaron Rodgers to say this in cut number one.
Aaron, did you agree with the decision to kick it there on fourth down?
I didn't have a decision on that one. That wasn't my decision. But I understand the thinking above 2 minutes with all of our timeouts. But, yeah, that wasn't my decision.
Ugh! I can't stand Aaron Rodgers. It was an easy route for me. I was rooting for Tom Brady and the Green Bay or for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, no doubt, because of moments like this from Aaron Rodgers. It could be as high as you want in terms of, you know, MVP, you're rolling as an offense, you've had a great season yet again, and then, you know, he finds a way to always put it on somebody else except for himself. And granted, he played a great game, but, I mean, now his future is in jeopardy with the Green Bay Packers, all these things that Aaron Rodgers is alluding to. But that's also what happens when Matt LaFleur, unfortunately, when you make these kinds of decisions and take the ball out of the hands of your MVP quarterback.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps is here. I'm Stacey Ross. We're talking about our big takeaway, the theme from these two conference championship games. And the theme is aggressiveness. Get your guys, step one. Step two, trust your guys to get it done when it matters most. The two teams that lost did not trust their guys on offense to get it done when it mattered most. Now, the obvious one we've been talking about is Matt LaFleur's decision to go for the field goal in four down territory late in a game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Bucs go on to get a couple first downs, win that one. On the other, in the other conference in the AFC, and I don't remember, Curtis, it was either you or Jake, one of you said Buffalo's decisions might even have been worse than Green Bay's.
Well, I said that because
yeah, that's Jake Heaps.
That's a Jake Heaps
original.
I said that because the reality is with the Bills in Kansas City and the way that those games were going, particularly at the end of the half when Sean McDermott elected to go for points instead of a touchdown, those are moments where you can get caught up in a conservative nature. And I understand his rationale and his thinking is that, look, from a confidence point of view, coming away with some semblance of points is good, right? So you go into your drive in the end of the half and you're down 21-9 and you go down and you don't get any points before the half, that can be a momentum killer for you heading into the second half. But 3 points isn't going to cut it. And when you've got a quarterback who has played excellent down in the red zone in his career, not just the season, in his career, in terms of making great decisions, in terms of being a legitimate dual threat, both in the passing game and running the football down there in the red zone, not allowing that player to create and to come up big for you in those moments, to me, was also what cost you the game. I mean, you had opportunities to continue to put the pressure on Kansas City. And as we saw and witnessed, Kansas City's offense, they're going to find ways to put up points. And trying to trade field goal for field goal is not the way that that game is going to be played out with the Chiefs. That's why they're so difficult, is because you have to play touchdown for touchdown with the Kansas City Chiefs in order to keep up and keep pace, or else eventually they're just going to separate from you. And this was a clear example of that. And at one point, the game gets to a 31-15 lead, and now Buffalo is playing in desperation mode. They've got a massive hole to overcome. And so I thought that in that moment with Sean McDermott, twice in the low red zone, you decide to kick field goals instead of go for touchdowns. I thought that that was decisions that really put the Bills in a bad spot.
We've got just 1 minute left here before we jump into three questions. I have a question for you first, Jake. So you, unfortunately, are going to have four questions here. If we're going to make this local, we're taking it back to Seattle, we're taking what we learned, being aggressive and trusting your players to get it done. If we're taking that to a Seattle point of view, is there a moment this year that springs to mind where you thought, if Seattle would have taken this kind of approach, they could have either won that game or converted that drive or gotten that score? I know that that's a big one to throw on you, but is there, or do you feel like this is a habit that Seattle would benefit from adopting? Because you don't want to always risk it. That's risky.
No, you don't.
It's risk for a reason.
You don't. But it's weird to see the evolution of Pete Carroll. And I would be very curious as to know why. Why Pete Carroll, in these interviews, when you talk to him about fourth down, well, he always comes out and says, well, remember at the beginning when I was super aggressive on fourth down? I always want to go for it. I'm hormonal. That's what he said when it comes to fourth down decisions. I had to learn to kind of back off of that and to have cooler heads prevail. But to me, since he has done that, he has made some really, really questionable fourth down decisions in terms of when to be conservative, when to go for it. And you know, I think one of the biggest reasons, you look at the most recent game that they lost against the Rams, that fourth and one. Yeah, you could talk about the meddling, but there's also the rationale of Pete Carroll saying, I didn't really care if we went for it and converted, or whether we had to kick or whether we had to punt. It didn't matter to me. I thought both things would be good.
Yeah,
and
for
I was,
many fans,
I was
that
just
was
fine settling for punting the football on fourth and one in, you know, 8 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. I mean, what?
Yeah.
So that rationale, I mean, you could just look at it and point to the most recent game. So there are multiple other moments. But yes, Christian from the 206, our resident lawyer of the Jake and Stacey show.
Oh, yes, our attorney.
Yeah, you have to keep your foot on the gas. And if there's anything that you can learn from any of those moments and what Andy Reid has traditionally done over the last few years, what Bruce Arians did in one of the biggest calls and the biggest moments of this season, they trusted their quarterbacks and they put their foot on the gas. And they stayed aggressive in those moments when most teams and coaches get conservative. And there's a reason for that. It's a risky call. But at the same time, if you feel like you have the right quarterback, you are prepared for the moment, and you trust them to make the right decisions in those moments, it's easy. And I love that freeing attitude and that philosophy. And I think it best serves teams more often than not, because those situations are pretty clear cut when you should be conservative. But when you're on the edge and you're able to continue to be aggressive and you're able to continue to put teams and coaches on their heels in those fourth down situations as well, I think it's critical. And I'm hoping that, you know, Pete looked at those games and watched those games and didn't just say, oh yeah, I agree with the call and these coaches are getting, you know, flack for something that I don't necessarily agree with. I hope he's looking at it and saying, you know what? Yeah, I do need to get back to being the original Pete Carroll and being aggressive and being, you know, Pete, nickname I can't say, that people were calling him at the beginning of his tenure there. That's what he's got to turn back into, because he has the quarterback to be able to get it done.
All right, it's 11:15. That means it's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What? What?
Question one, with all that's going to be at stake in 2 weeks, do you think there's going to be any sort of home field advantage for the Bucks?
Yes, I do. I mean, is it going to be overwhelming in terms of their home field advantage? But yeah, it's definitely a home field advantage. This is your home field. You're used to being here. You don't have to travel and do all the extra stuff that everybody else has to do as an organization. I mean, you get to be right in your facility, practice. I mean, that's amazing. That's a great feeling if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So yeah, I do think there's a little bit of home field advantage there. Do I think it's overwhelming? Do I think it's something that is unfair for the Kansas City Chiefs? No. But yeah, there's definitely an advantage for the Bucs there.
I agree. I think 80% of your home field advantage comes from having your fans in the stands, making noise when the offense is on the field, getting your defense hyped up, helping to control the game, force some false starts, blah, blah, blah. All of that's awesome. That extra 20%, I think, like you said, comes from being in your home stadium. You feel like you're defending your turf. It's your locker room. It's everything that you're familiar with.
And to go along with that, how many guys have played in a Super Bowl on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers roster? How many of those guys?
At least two.
So you got Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski.
Right.
Everybody else, I'm not sure. I haven't taken a deep dive, but I'm going to assume it's just those two. And with all those young players, those star players, it can be overwhelming. And you can have them be more comfortable in a Super Bowl.
That's a good point.
I think is definitely an advantage.
Number two.
Greg Olsen announced his retirement yesterday. So what I want to know, is he the finesse king of 2020 after collecting $7 million for the season he had with the Seahawks, all before riding off into the sunset?
I wouldn't say Greg Olsen was the finesse king. Did he make out pretty well? Yes. But I also think that as I look back at 2020, it's also one of the great regrets of this offense, is when I watch Greg Olsen on film, this isn't an old guy just barely almost to his retirement. He had plenty left in the tank. And so I thought it was unfortunate that Russell Wilson and this offense couldn't have utilized his skill set better in 2020. Now, is he worth $7 million? No. No, I do think that that was a steep, overpriced tag for Greg Olsen. But he had plenty left in the tank, and his production, I think, was not a reflection of the player that he was this last season, right? I think that he had plenty more to give and to offer. He just wasn't utilized the way that he should have been.
Yeah, I feel like none of the tight ends were. Most years, I mean, go look at 17, 16. I mean, I don't know where 19 would be, where Hollister would land on there. But normally, especially for an explosive offense, you find your tight end, like your pass-catching tight end, is still like number 2, 3 in targets or receiving yards or touchdowns or what have you. This is the first time I can remember in a while where the Seattle Seahawks didn't have a tight end on there until at least number 4. Hollister, Olsen, Disley kind of crowded around there with, I'm going to say 40 at most for Hollister, an average of about 33 targets for the three of them. I mean, that pales in comparison to the way they use Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, but it's also less than David Moore got. We're talking targets, receptions, Chris Carson got. So I loved seeing wide receivers used more this year. This tight end, I think I would have liked to see them incorporate tight ends more. So, yeah, part of that's Greg Olsen, getting paid a lot for doing a little. But I also think the tight ends, that part of that's game planning. Part of it's the way that your offense is structured, them not getting a lot of opportunities. Also, Curtis, you sent this. Shout out to Andrew Pearson on Twitter, who said, oh, what's this? Jimmy Graham's 2020 $6 million cap hit. That's $1 million less than Olsen as a free agent. Result, 16 games, 76 targets, 50 receptions, almost 500 yards, 32 first downs, and 8 touchdowns. No big deal.
He did nothing wrong.
Did nothing wrong.
Number 3.
Another quarterback seems to be entering the trade market as the Lions look to be parting ways with Matthew Stafford. If you were a QB needy team, what would your interest level be in acquiring him?
Very high. Very high. And you're going to find out about Stafford. Everybody's saying that, I mean, a high majority of people saying Stafford really isn't that good. He's just a big armed guy. What'd you call him? He was a...
Oh, the Jay Cutler.
He's Jay Cutler with a better attitude.
Okay, he's Jay Cutler with a better attitude. So, Curtis, you will find out if that is truly the case or not. If he goes to a team that is put together, a franchise that is better put together from the top down, and he can't get it done, then yeah, you get the credit for saying he is Jay Cutler with a better attitude. But I believe that this guy is tough. He's a good leader. He's got a special skill set and has been a part of an organization that has just been absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
His entire career. So if I'm a team that's QB needy, I have a high interest in Matthew Stafford. I think that he could be the missing piece.
He's never had an exceptionally high completion percentage, but in each of the last 5 seasons, he's got at least 64%, which that's better than Josh Allen was his first 2 years. He's also throwing it all over the field. He had 4,000 yards this year, 26 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. Those aren't bad numbers. I'm absolutely, if I'm a quarterback needy team, absolutely. He also had 4 fourth quarter comebacks. Yeah, that's all. Game winning drives.
Yeah. It's
the GOAT.
Well, I wouldn't call him the GOAT.
No, he's not the GOAT, but
I would definitely not call him the GOAT. But you look at some of these teams that are needy.
He's better than
Trubisky.
He's better than whoever. I mean, Jacksonville's going to have Lawrence, but whoever they would have had this year, flipping between Minshew and who was the other guy?
Well,
Glennon.
Yeah, Glennon. I mean, but exactly. But they're not going to take. They're going to have Trevor Lawrence as their first round pick.
Exactly.
But if you look at Denver, you look at San Francisco, Washington, right? Indy. I think there's a bunch of Chicago. If I didn't mention them, those are a couple teams that I think would really really benefit from having a guy like Matt Stafford, and who knows, maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers if they're moving on from Ben Roethlisberger.
Is aggressiveness the lesson of the weekend from these conference championship games, and is there anything we can learn from Matt LaFleur's decision? Let's ask Mike Salk. He joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Welcome back into Jake and Stacey. Joining us right now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
So obviously we're reacting initially to the championship games from this weekend. Really, there's plenty to talk about the AFC. I can't stop talking about two things with the NFC game. Number one is that decision to go for a field goal instead of a touchdown or a fourth down attempt with Rodgers. I want to ask you about that one, but I have to afterward get to the idea that Tom Brady yet again in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So first things first, just what did you make of that decision to go for a field goal? Did you not mind it? Did you hate it?
Even before that, first things really, really first,
yeah.
Thank God that I don't have to watch Bruce Arians against Josh Allen in the Super Bowl. That just would have been too much for me.
Oh,
two guys that I've repeatedly said are not worth their paycheck. The two of them in the Super Bowl together might have been the end of me. So I was really happy the Chiefs did their thing and Josh Allen reverted back to being the player I've always thought he was yesterday. So thank God for that. As for Matt LaFleur's decision, two things on that. First of all, Aaron Rodgers didn't exactly make it easy on him. And I know LaFleur is going to be the one to burn for this, and he's going to have to twist in the wind. And, oh, what a wonderful guy. Aaron Rodgers certainly didn't help him out there by just adding a little extra rope for him to twist on after the game by saying that it wasn't his decision at all. But, hey, Aaron, how about doing something with the previous couple plays on both second and third down? He had running lanes, and especially on third down, if he had decided to run and pick up half more, what if it's fourth and two instead of fourth and seven? How different is the call for Matt LaFleur then as opposed to having 7 yards and doing bupkis on the previous three plays? I don't think Rodgers exactly helped him out. All that being said, you got to go for it. You just have to. The various ways in which it can work out for you are better. Now, look, even if you get it and if you get the two-point conversion and tie it up, you're giving Tom Brady the ball with over 2 minutes needing only a field goal. I've seen that script before, trust me. So it's a bad move. It doesn't look good, but I don't think they win the game either way.
Another critical decision that was made in that game as well is in the first half, you got Bruce Arians, if you don't risk it, you don't get the biscuit, on fourth down saying, hey, we're actually going to send the offense back out there with Tom Brady on fourth and three and going to give him a chance to convert and try and get some points at the end, and that paid off huge. How big of a turning point was that in the game?
I mean, it's essentially the game, and I guess I got to begrudgingly give Bruce credit. Although, to me, the fourth and three was one thing you were able to sort of move the ball forward to pick up a field goal, which is what I thought the goal was. To throw deep on what would have been the final play of the half, potentially, that was a really, really gutsy play. And when you've got Tom Brady, that's the kind of play you can attempt to make because he's the GOAT, and the ball he threw was perfect. Kevin King with terrible coverage. He really had a rough day for Green Bay, and there you go. I mean, I would agree. I think that's honestly a bigger decision and had more of an impact on who wins and loses that game than anything Matt LaFleur did in the final few minutes.
Hey, I'm not denying that Brady's the GOAT. Certainly the best ever to play this game, and he's got the rings to show for it. But does it ever annoy you just a little bit to see the same guy win over and over?
I mean, generally, those things do annoy me, but I don't know. Look, you know, I've said this a few times, but I was in New England and followed the Patriots. I was around this for a long time, and I was always under the impression that as important as Brady was, he was 1B to Belichick's 1A, that none of it really functions in New England without Bill Belichick, and that was the key to all of the victories they had, and especially if you were there in the early years when Brady was more of a game manager, don't make mistakes, right, win the game in the final 2 minutes before, you know, he sort of changed his persona in 2007, I really was of the belief that it was more Belichick than Brady. But I just don't know how to continue to feel that way after what we've seen this year. Maybe Belichick bounces back next year. Maybe they bring in the right quarterback and everything changes and it was just a one-year down year. But for Tom Brady to go out with no training camp on a new team, no preseason, no nothing, and you know, bring all of those guys together and have the kind of success he has to be back in the Super Bowl, it's unparalleled. I mean, I don't know who else in the world could do that. I mean, I guess LeBron James has done some similar things, but basketball is a different sport. It's not nearly as hard to get on the same page. What Brady's done this year is, I think, as impressive as anything else he's done in his career, maybe more so.
Yeah, I would fully agree with you on that. And people out there could say, Well, I mean, gosh, you went to such a talented roster. It doesn't matter.
I am those
This is a Tampa Bay organization.
Yeah.
This is a Tampa Bay organization that has not been stellar. This is a head coach in Bruce Arians that has he been the NFC Championship game one time in his career, if at all? I can't remember exactly, but this is not.
Well, and Jake, also even beyond that, we've seen this movie before with other teams. Remember when the Eagles got like Nnamdi Asomugha, a few guys, and they were the team of destiny and good luck, and then they didn't make the playoffs. And we saw the Raiders bring in 12 guys in a year, and they didn't make the playoffs. Like, we've seen these super teams form before, and it's one of the reasons I was so down on what was going to happen in Tampa this year. Like, yeah, come on, we've seen that. We know what happens when everyone gets a bunch of high-priced free agents, throws them together for 1 year, it doesn't work. Well, guess what? It works when you have Tom Brady. And that is the one thing that has been different about this group than any other.
Yeah, and to tack on that, this wasn't an easy ride. They didn't coast through this. They had some major bumps along the way. They sneak in at the wild card spot, and then they go and win three games to get themselves into this point. I mean, it's truly incredible in terms of what Tom Brady has been able to accomplish this year in Tampa. But I want to flip it to the AFC game. What was your impressions of the Kansas City Chiefs just taking it to the Buffalo Bills?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, they are an outlier, I think. I just don't think there is anything else like them right now in the NFL. They're an outlier. And because of it, it makes it really hard to make judgments about the rest of the league based on how Kansas City operates, because they have just amassed such an incredible collection of speed and talent, and the coach who puts them in the right position to take advantage of it. It's really remarkable. But despite all of it, I guess the thing that still stands out to me, and if I'm trying to take anything away from what they do and bring it back here to Seattle, it's just their offensive line play is ridiculous. I mean, it's unbelievable. Mahomes has never touched. He sits back there. Now, he makes it better. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that he doesn't. He runs around and he avoids pressure when it comes. But you see that number where he hadn't been sacked in like 250 dropbacks or something ridiculous like that?
Yeah, it must be
nice. And
then
you look at their offensive line, and it's not a collection of high-priced free agents and first-round picks. It's a bunch of guys. But somehow they've all come together and turned that offensive line into a cohesive unit that functions as well as any in the league, if not better. So I know that they've got all the weaponry on the outside, and it's hard to figure out how to cover Kelsey and, you know, everybody. Like, that's hard. But gosh, Mahomes, he has so much time to make it happen. It's a lot easier to operate when you've got it.
What do you make then of Eric Bieniemy and not finding any of those head coaching positions?
Yeah, it's a tough one, and you know, you hear sort of rumblings behind the scenes of you know, what it may be about his personality that makes it hard. I don't know. I don't know Eric Bieniemy at all. But it's got to be something. There's got to be something that all of these NFL teams have looked at and said, no, I don't think that's the right fit for a head coach. And I would assume it's that. I mean, that there are personality traits that work very well for coordinators and don't work for head coaches. And maybe he's got one of those personality traits where his mind is perfect for one, but maybe he's not the leader of people or, you know, a delegator. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the man personally, but I think the challenge comes, and I think one of the reasons people will point to it and say that, you know, his skin color is a big part of it, is we've seen plenty of other coaches hired as head coaches who don't have that skill set. They just have a different skin color. And so I understand kind of both sides of the coin on this one, and I hate to be a fence straddler, but I can kind of see where everyone's coming from when it comes to Eric Bieniemy.
It's just one of those things that you look at, and it just is perplexing, because you're sitting there in that position, like you're saying, Saul, going, what is it? What is it that's holding this guy back? Because he certainly has the resume. He certainly has the pedigree at this stage of all the credentials that you would want, being a part of the best offense in the league right now and being a person that is definitely involved and in charge of a lot of the aspects. It's not just all Andy Reid. But it is perplexing, especially when you see a guy like Dan Campbell give the press conference that he gave in his opening monologue there in Detroit. I mean, just you just scratch your head and go, what are we missing?
Well, I mean, you know, that the Detroit Lions may have gotten it wrong probably shouldn't surprise any of us and isn't necessarily a reflection on any other head coach in Canada. But the point is well taken. And, you know, maybe next year will be his year. Maybe he's just not destined to do it. I don't know. But it's certainly a curious situation.
All right. He is Mike Salk. You can hear him every weekday here on Jake and Stacey at 11:30. Thanks so much, Mike.
See you guys.
Jake has a list of 11 names of Seahawks potential fits for their open offensive coordinator position. He put that out when the search started. Now, a couple of those guys have since taken jobs elsewhere, but Jake says it's clear now which type of coach they're going after. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Catching you guys up with the Seahawks' search for a new offensive coordinator. They've parted ways with Brian Schottenheimer. Y'all already knew that. And you probably know some of the names that they've since been linked to. A few of those guys have found new gigs elsewhere. I'll run through a list. All of these guys were on Jake's initial list. So just a brief catch up. Colts offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni, who Jake said could be a potential fit. He is now a head coach with the Eagles. Chargers offensive coordinator Shane Steichen. Well, he is now offensive coordinator for the Eagles under Sirianni's staff. The 49ers passing game coordinator and run game coordinator Mike and Mike LaFleur and Mike McDaniel. They have now both moved on. LaFleur follows Sala to the Jets as his OC. McDaniel's promoted to OC in LaFleur's place. Finally, ex-Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn, now OC for the Lions. So who's left, Jake? Who are we left looking at? Who could be a fit? And most importantly, which type of coach are they going after? Have you learned anything in the last like week and a half?
Yeah, what I've learned is over the last week and a half, there was initially names out there that were former head coaches, established guys in this league, Kirby Wilson, who has had a ton of experience in the NFL and experience with Pete Carroll in the past. But none of those names really should have been taken seriously. Those were exploratory names, I believe, in the process, in the initial phase of things. But really, as I laid out the 11 names that you could look at in terms of offensive coordinators and candidates, it was sectioned off into experienced play callers and younger, innovative minds who are the up-and-comers, who currently aren't offensive coordinators. And to me, as I look at the search, I believe it's gone to that area of up-and-comers, guys who currently aren't offensive coordinators right now. And the only downside of that, Stacey, is the fact that you might bring in a guy that doesn't have experience calling plays in the NFL, that doesn't have that background. And so, yes, in theory, they are somewhat learning on the job, right? And that's why I would love for them to for it to come out and then interview Nathaniel Hackett. But then again, Nathaniel Hackett's called plays in the NFL. He didn't call plays for the Green Bay Packers. Matt LaFleur did. So he was a part of designing that offense and coming up with the game plans each week, but he wasn't the play caller there in Green Bay over the last 2 years. So there is a little bit of risk there. Are you getting that same product? And that has been the case with multiple guys over the years. But when you look at this list that I have in terms of narrowing the vision, to me, I think it's Shane Waldron, Ken Dorsey, Nathaniel Hackett or Luke Getsy from the Green Bay Packers, and then Pep Hamilton. Those five names to me, I think, is where this thing is narrowing down. And maybe we'll be surprised by another name that comes out there, but just kind of seeing how this is narrowing down and where the focus has gone. There's Joe Lombardi that is also out there as well. He could be a candidate just with his background with Drew Brees. But I really think that if you look at these five names, they stand out to me the most. And I tweeted out over the weekend when it was leaked out there that Shane Waldron had interviewed, who is the passing game coordinator for the Rams, and Ken Dorsey is another guy who is the current quarterback coach for the Buffalo Bills, who is also getting a ton of interest from the Miami Dolphins right now for their offensive coordinator position. I think those two guys really encourage me. Out of all the names that we've heard, those two names really, really encourage me. And they're not guys that have great background in calling plays, but when you come from great systems and you've been around different systems, like those two guys have, Shane Waldron has coached every single position in his coaching career. He was with the New England Patriots at one point. He's been with Sean McVay over the last 4 years. To me, that's a guy that really is intriguing to me. And when people, when they hired Matt LaFleur as the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, there was a lot of questions surrounding him and a lot of jokes that were surrounding him because he also was offensive coordinator by title, mm-hmm. not by game day strategy. He wasn't calling the plays. Sean McVay was in 2017, yet he got a head coaching job. Shane Waldron wasn't calling plays, but he's been a part of that game plan, that brain trust for Sean McVay over the last 4 years. He's a guy that would bring a different element to this offense that they haven't seen, ability to mix in tempos and come up with creative plays to get your best guys the ball down the field and also short intermediate to create in space. Ken Dorsey is a guy that has been around the game a long time, but has also learned from guys like Norv Turner and has found creative ways to use guys like Cam Newton to make them as effective as possible, and was a huge influence on Josh Allen. Everybody talks about Brian Daboll, but Ken Dorsey was also a huge influence on Josh Allen, and Josh Allen has tremendous things to say about Ken Dorsey. So I like those two guys in terms of those names. They're not the experienced play callers that I would love to have, but they do bring a confidence and a background that I think could prove to be very successful here in Seattle.
Okay, so we've got about 3 minutes here. I am going to spring this on you really quick. I'm a Seahawks fan who wants this, and then you'll tell me which of these guys I might personally be hoping to see as OC. All right? So if I am a Seahawks fan who wants maybe the most creative play caller of these guys, who might I be rooting for them to bring on staff?
Well, if you're still looking at different names here, I think Nathaniel Hackett is a name that I would still hold out hope for. They just got done. It would be extremely hard to get him away from Green Bay, in my opinion. Even though he's not the play caller, you would have to offer him significant money to lure him away to become the offensive coordinator here in Seattle. But I wouldn't give up on him. The next best guy that you could go after from that Green Bay Packers coaching tree is Luke Getsy. He's the quarterback coach and passing game coordinator for them right now. So I think that I would be surprised if he did not get an interview at this point, just with the familiarity and the background of that system. But the two guys that I really think, and I know Michael Bumpus is high on Pep Hamilton. Mm-hmm. He comes from a unique background. I really like Pep Hamilton. I would not be disappointed if it was Pep Hamilton. But the two guys that I really like are Shane Waldron and Ken Dorsey. I just think that they have a certain it factor about them that could prove very successful in this league. Dorsey being a quarterback-centric guy that has been a great tutor for quarterbacks over the years. But Waldron is the guy that if you're going to ask me my opinion today, Stacey, who I would love to see them go after, it's Shane Waldron out of those names. Because I'm not buying that Nathaniel Hackett is going to want to go to Seattle or that Pete Carroll and the Seahawks are going to offer him the crazy dollars that it would require Hackett to leave to become the play caller here in Seattle. I think Shane Waldron would be the guy that I think could add a lot of different traits to this offense and play at a level that I think Russell Wilson would really like to play at. When you look at the Rams and how they approach the game, and they're very run-centric, right? You look at Pete Carroll serving both sides. Pete Carroll, you look at the Rams offense, you look at the Shanahan coaching tree, it starts with the run game, and they have great respect for the run game and creating a bunch of different ways to run the ball. And then you also have an explosive pass game off of that. I think it would be a really nice marriage and a nice change for this offense and what they're looking for.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. Jake just dropped a ton of information on you guys. And so if you have any questions specifically about that search for the new offensive coordinator or any of those names that you just heard, as a reminder, at 1:45 every single day, we have basically our question segment. It's called What I Need to Know. It's for fun stuff. It's for any sport, anywhere that you want. But I know that I'm already seeing some questions about it. So if you want to send those in, 710-710. I'll go ahead and hang on to them for Jake later coming up at 145. Coming up next, though, let's talk about what we're really, really talking about when it comes to those NFL conference championship games. Sure, there was the final score, but what's the real story? That's next.